It was a blessing having, as I said, Jim and Lori there at that particular time. I thought that it would be good just to finish up the day knowing all that's taken place today. We're going to end up on our knees here in just a moment with all of our deacons. But before that, just to think through this whole idea of discipleship, these deacons coming alongside to help us walk and to be Christ-like. And they themselves need that as well. So as I've been thinking about this issue of discipleship, I was reading through the book of Luke this past week, and I'm not finished yet. I think I'm up to about chapter 19 or 20 of Luke. But as I've been going through the book of Luke this week, the challenges that have been coming to my heart because of this week has landed me in Luke 14. And in Luke 14, we have these verses. You follow along in the text, if you will. Verse 25 says this: great multitudes went with him, and he turned and he said to them, if anyone comes to me and does not hate his father and mother, wife, children, brothers and sisters, yes, his own life also, he cannot be my disciple. And whoever does not bear his cross and come after me cannot be my disciple. For which of you intending to build a tower does not sit down first and count the cost, whether he has enough to finish it, in order that after he has laid the foundation and is not able to finish, all who see it begin to mock him, saying, this man began to build, he's just not able to finish. Or what king going to make war against another king does not sit down first and consider whether he is able with 10,000 to meet him who comes against him with 20,000? Or else, while the other is still a great way off, he sends a delegation and asks conditions of peace. So likewise, whoever of you does not forsake all that he has cannot be my disciple. Salt is good, but if the salt has lost its flavor, how shall it be seasoned? It is neither fit for the land nor for the dunghill, but men throw it out. And then Jesus ends with these words: he that has ears to hear, let him hear. Whatever Christ began in verse 25, he ends in verse number 35 by saying, if you have ears to hear what I'm saying, I want you to listen to me. So as I begin to dive into this text, and I can't give a full exegesis of the text, we only have about 15 minutes, but as I look through the text, this is what jumps out at me through the text. It begins in verse 25 with great multitudes who are surrounding Jesus. Everybody likes novelty. And Jesus is emptying the hospitals. And so everybody is following him. And in verse 26 and 27 and 33, he makes the same statement with these words: you cannot be my disciple. Verse 27, you cannot be my disciple. And verse 33, you cannot be my disciple. After the first two, you cannot be my disciples. Before he gives the third one, he gives two illustrations. One about a farmer, verse 28, 29, and 30. And one about a king, in verse 31 and 32. And then says, therefore, likewise, you cannot be my disciple. And then he ends with something so mundane and yet so powerful: salt. It's good, but when it loses its flavor, it's good for nothing. It's useless. It's not fit for land. It's not even fit for a refuse pile. Men just throw it out. Do you hear what I am saying to you? So when I look at this, I wanted to grab what he is saying in verse 26 and 27 and 33. Discipleship. So in verse 26, I'm immediately struck with the word hate. In verse 27, I'm immediately struck with the word cross. And in verse 33, I'm immediately struck with the verb forsake. So that as Jesus works through this, you cannot be my disciple, you cannot be my disciple, you cannot be my disciple, as Jesus works through it, he intensifies and raises the ante each time he gives this statement, you cannot be my disciple. And yet it's a high bar when you look at verse number 26, because the term here is hate. I'll never forget, as a seminary student back in 1980, 79-80, that I worked for my grandfather, and I took out tree stumps. It's a tree stump removal business. And I would be in a lot of different homes, a lot of different places, which opened up conversations with people. And I remember at this very wealthy home, and I backed my stump machine up and took the stump out. And as I began to talk with the lady who came out, you could see she was extremely burdened. And as I talked with her, in our conversation, she found out I was a seminary student, wanted to study for ministry. And so she just blurted out that her son is in some cult. And we're good Lutherans, she said, and he's in some cult that takes this a verse in Luke 14 and says you've got to hate your family. And in verse 33, you've got to forsake all of your possessions. And so everything that we have given to him, he's 18 years old, everything we've given, he has given away, and he's totally renounced us as his parents, saying publicly, I hate my parents. Can you tell me, is that really in the Bible? When I look at a very difficult passage of Scripture like Luke 14, 26, if any man comes to me and does not hate father, mother, brothers, sisters, yes, even his own life. What I want to do is I want to say this. Is there a parallel passage that gives insight into this passage? Did Jesus speak in another place, and did one of the other synoptics pick up on it, and did they say that? Well, it just so happens in this verse it does. Hold your finger here and turn back to Matthew in chapter 10. Matthew in chapter 10. In Matthew 10, it's the same idea, same context, same. And it's interesting that this section is about division that Christ brings in homes because of who he is and because of his message. And in verse 37, you see this verse. And notice how it's laid out in the Gospel of Matthew. He who loves father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. He who loves son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. And whoever does not take his cross and follow me is not worthy of me. It's a parallel passage put in the positive. And so the issue that is brought out from the gospel accounts is that in comparison with all others, the love for Jesus is so supreme, nothing else ranks in order. There's an Old Testament illustration that you can look up sometime. It's Genesis 29. It's the relationship that is had with Leah and Rachel. And it says in Genesis 29, verse 30 and 31, you have these words that God saw that Leah was hated. In the verse previous to that, it says this, and Jacob loved Rachel more than Leah. So that when God saw that she was hated, he opens her womb. And she bears, as you know, immediately six children, one right after another. And I think that that's a wonderful Old Testament illustration. And compare it with a parallel passage so that when you read the Gospel of Luke in chapter 14 and verse number 26, Jesus is looking at this multitude and he's going to get their attention. And the way he gets their attention is that he uses a term of comparison which really would have sunk deep into their souls. You must love me more than anything, anyone else in this world, including your own self. The highest of all human love is found in 14:26, and that is love for mothers and fathers, love for wife, love for children, love for brothers and sisters, love for your own life. This is the highest human level. The bar is awful high here. And Jesus takes this highest of all human love and he says, listen, let me give you something that's going to sink down into your ears. I want you to listen to what I'm saying. That you must love me supremely. Or else you cannot be my disciple. Discipleship is not about I feel today like I will follow Jesus. Discipleship is not about, well, I think today I'm really going to do something good for Jesus. Or I think today, because I'm feeling good, I really want to do this for Jesus. That is not discipleship. This is what I told the people out in the foyer today, which I tell all our new members class, and that's this. You can open up these doors at Colonial Baptist, and Colonial Baptist Church is open to anybody, any Christian that wants, any person, unsaved or Christian, can come. But membership is reserved for disciples. You see, a disciple is marked in Matthew 28 through what? Through the waters of what? Baptism. And then, that's not all it means to be a disciple. It is that we also to be teaching them to observe everything that I have commanded. See, this is discipleship. I think that there are many people who want to call themselves disciples, and we find this in the Gospel of John over and over and over again. They want to call themselves disciples, but at the same time, they are not loving Jesus supremely. In that case, think of what it says in verse 34 and 35. You are like salt that is without, that has lost its flavor. That salt is not fit for land. It's not even filled for a refuse. Listen to what I am saying. Jesus is really, you know, how could he make it any stronger? But he does. Look what he does in verse 27. And, notice that connecting conjunction there, and whoever does not bear his cross and come after me cannot be my disciple. I mean, he is moving from human love, love me supremely, as sort of now the foundation. Now he ups the ante and he says this, there's something even beyond the idea of loving me supremely, and that is this, that you bear your cross. And the other texts use the word daily. It's interesting that that cross metaphor, turn back to Luke 9:23, where Jesus brought out the cross metaphor again. Verse 23, he said to them all, this is 9:23, if anyone desires to come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross daily and follow me. And this is the idea that is within the whole concept of the crucifixion. Because the crucifixion metaphor would have been very well known to a first century mindset. It's not well known to us today. Maybe you've heard people said, well, you know, my temper is my cross that I bear. No, that's the cross your wife has to bear. That's not your cross. And really, that's not even it at all, because the crucifixion metaphor would have been understood in the first century of this. When someone is condemned to die, there's no way out. So they must carry the cross. There's going to be a sign on this cross, like it was with Jesus, what their crime was against the state of Rome. And they're going to go to the place of crucifixion and they are going to die. There is no U-turn. So when Jesus moves from this human love relationship to now love me supremely, see, people might get around that and say, yes, I do love Jesus. And I think that we all, pastor included, can be very sincere in when we say that we love Jesus above all other. Sometimes crises in our life, or crises, or plural crises in our life, reveal that we really do love other people supremely. We're not happy with the will of Jesus for our life. Jesus made a mistake with me. Surely if he loved me, he wouldn't do that. See, that's what verse number 26 is dealing with. Verse 27 really ups the ante. It's Jesus says this, you are in a crucifixion death march. You are carrying a cross. I love what Dietrich Bonhoeffer says. When you are saved, when you become a Christian, you immediately are given a cross. Now just think about that. The moment you are saved, you are given a cross. That's why I so appreciate John MacArthur's book on this whole issue of discipleship, because it just went through the 20-year revision. And because I think that there are many people who are, we live in a sort of a plastic society And discipleship is not really seen for what it is. And so Jesus is really speaking to the heart of the people who are following him. See, that's what verse 25 says. There are multitudes following. There are multitudes of people who say, I am a disciple of Jesus. And Jesus says, you cannot unless I am supreme. You cannot unless you are in a death march. And the point is, discipleship has no turning back. There's no U-turn. You don't come to a crisis of life and face the doctor, and the doctor says, you have this, and say, okay, I'm out of here. Christ, I really loved you. Why would you let this happen? There's no U-turn to a disciple. A disciple listens to the words of the doctor, or listens to the words of a husband, or listens to the words of a wife, or listens to the words of a team, or a sibling, or a boss, listens to those words, and immediately, when those words come and flay you, and want to just absolutely lay you out, you immediately look in the face of Jesus and say, Jesus, I am in line following you. Is this your will for me? I accept it. I accept it. Because I'm getting far more than I deserve. I know what I deserve. Because if I got what I deserve, I would not go to hell. I would be in hell. So when Jesus is issuing this call of discipleship, he is issuing a call to the very heart of who we are and saying, I want to deal with your love life. I want to deal with your emotions. And then he moves to emotions of love because he knows that's subjective. And he moves to the will. My arms are tied to the bar of a cross. And the point of that cross is somewhere down the road, and I am in this death march, and I can't get out of it. No matter what takes place, my will is bound to a death march. You see, when we talk about Christianity, it is different than how Jesus talks about it. Yes, it is true. Jesus mentions a lot about Hades and hell. But whenever Jesus is looking into the eyes of these people who are following, after he heals them all, and he never said, okay, be my disciple, I'll heal you. He just heals them all. He gives all 5,000 food. You know, from those little that little bread, fish. He just gives them all. He never said, you believe in me? Okay, if you believe in me, I'll do this. I mean, this is the mercy of Jesus. This is common grace, a grace that is common to all. This is how Christ works. And the goodness of God, theologically, Romans 2, the goodness of God is leading us to what? What does the verse say? To what? Repentance. And we don't even know it. And so what Jesus is saying to the hearts of people, you want to be my disciple? Then you will persevere. You will not stop. You are in a death march. Die to self. Die to everything around you. It's powerful. The last thing, and I have to close here. The last thing that's interesting, before he gives it to us in verse 33, he gives two illustrations. Illustration number one is about a farmer who was going to build a tower. And the way they built towers is this. You have to understand that there's this hard Cenomanian limestone and rocky all over. So they're going to have a field. So what they'll do is they'll take and they'll lift all these stones out and clear the field. And they won't throw the stones away. They could build a fence, a rock fence to keep animals out. Or they could build a tower, if they could, where they will eventually store grain and things. I mean, that's what he's talking about here. It's a farmer who is thinking ahead. I'm going to use all of this rock, and this is what I'm going to do so that I can actually build a place that will store my grain. That's what the tower is. And when I look at the text, Jesus says, now which intending to build this kind of a tower does not sit down first and begin to add it all up? Verse 31, or what king, when he's going to war, does not sit down first and consider if he is with 10,000 can meet somebody who's got twice as many soldiers as he? Otherwise, if he considers this and I can't do it, to save face, he sends a delegation for peace. He's thinking it all the way through. Now, Jesus says, I want you to think this all the way through. I have said to you, your emotions are involved. Love me supremely. I have said to you, your will is involved. Love me supremely. But now I'm going to really have where we would say today, the rubber meeting the road. And here it is. I'm going to deal with your possessions, everything that you possess. If your emotions and your will are where they say they are, then, verse 33, you are willing to abandon all, or else you cannot be my disciple. Now, is he saying that it's impossible to be a disciple and at the same time retain possessions? No, he's not saying that. The point is, discipleship means that my heart actually holds on to nothing but Jesus. And how does he end up? He ends up in verse 34 and 35. Salt is good. If salt loses its flavor, how will it be seasoned? It is neither fit for the land nor for the dunghill, but men throw it out. Now, if you're really hearing me, I want you to listen to what I'm saying. In other words, men and women, this is the only kind of disciple Jesus is looking for. He's not looking for a disciple on Monday or on Sunday, and Monday through Saturday, it's yours. He's looking for somebody whose emotions, whose will, and whose possessions are all his. So, when we got saved, how do we get saved? We didn't want to go to hell, right? But when you stop and you take a step back and see what Jesus is saying, what he is saying to us is so challenging that it is no wonder in John 6, it says, when these disciples heard his words, many went away. And Jesus said to his disciples, will you go away also? And Peter says, Lord, to whom can we turn? You have the words of life. So brothers and sisters, when we come to a church and we're with all our imperfections, teaching and baptizing and teaching and baptizing and teaching and baptizing, I mean, this is foundational. And so this next level of bringing godly servant leaders in so that they can look over 11 different families and be a part of lives so that you can really be a disciple, so that there can be hands-on, so there can be something that would be significant for you. Yes, of course the pastors are always available. Please don't take it that way. But we want to make certain that we are moving our church forward in Christ-likeness. When I think of the people that God could bring here, I want to make sure that it's not about a number, but it's about people who are looking like